Hey there, it's Colt Cabana. Thank you so much for checking out the past shows from the archives. All the past ones in this feed are ad-free. I took out all the ads. If this is something you like, you can listen to every single episode of the Art of Wrestling podcast dating back to 2010, absolutely ad-free for only $4 a month on my Patreon. That's patreon.com/Colt Cabana. All right, enjoy the show.
This is the Art of Wrestling with professional wrestler Colt Cabana. It's
Colt Cabana. All right, how you doing? Come on in, sit down, relax. You're about to listen to the Art of Wrestling, a professional wrestling podcast. It's a life podcast. It's a personal journal. It's an entryway into the minds, the souls, the hearts, and the lives of the people involved in the world of professional wrestling. I am your host. My name is Colt Cabana. I'm a podcaster. I'm a streamer. I'm a voter. Most importantly, though, I am a professional wrestler, and I am coming to you live from my studio apartment in Chicago, Illinois. Before I go any further, this is a fan-supported and listener-supported podcast supported by people just like you. We give it to you free of charge every other Thursday. ColtCabana.com, iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcast from. A couple great ways that you can support: rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Tell a friend, tweet it out, let people know on social media or in person. The Art of Wrestling, it's going strong and it is great. The best way to support, though: ColtMerch.com, DigitalColt.com. I ship everything from my apartment. I would love to ship it to you. And of course, Patreon.com/ColtCabana, where for only $4 a month, you can listen to over 10 years of past archives ad-free. For a dollar extra on top of that, special segments, video, acting gigs, dark matches, a lot. And for $5 on top of that, I will give you a shout-out at the end of the podcast, and I will send you a monthly collector's AOW selfie-style photo pin this month, Tommaso Ciampa. It is a collector's pin. I will never make more, and I want you to have it. Today on the podcast is Tully Blanchard. Here's a story about Tully Blanchard that it is pointless in telling him, so I will tell you now. I think that's one of the things where I've grown as a podcaster over the years, is I'll have things that I did with somebody and they will never remember it. And why should they? So why bring it up and make it an awkward scene? And they're like, I don't remember. And then I'm just like, oh, I'm an idiot. But while losing to some wrestler on Velocity at WWE, Tully Blanchard was my agent. I believe he was an agent there for maybe 2 weeks. I also had Tim Horner once as an agent. I don't even think he was there for 2 weeks. It might have been the only week Tim Horner was there, but he was my agent. And I remember Tully told me that I was good and that to make my arm bars a little tighter if I could. But otherwise, I was good to go. So my relationship with Tully Blanchard goes back years, over a decade, if you will. But my new relationship is with Tully here in AEW, and that's what we are promoting. We are promoting AEW Wrestling, where I have been on Dynamite for a couple of weeks now, and you can watch AEW Dynamite Wednesday nights, 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central. It is what wrestling fans want out of a wrestling product, and that's so nice to say that, and I can say that honestly. I do believe it. I mean, wrestling fans will never be happy, ever, but it's like as close to what a wrestling fan would want as a wrestling product to what they think they would want. But what do they know that they... We'll never have the perfect product. Except ECW 96. I'm just saying. That's just for me to say. That's what we all say from the past. We love the wrestling of our past. It's never the wrestling of the present. And that's perfect to have Tully Blanchard on. My memories as a 7-year-old child on the Superstation. Tully Blanchard in a nice suit with that beautiful 80s mullet haircut, 80s sunglasses, just looking like the coolest uncle ever. He was more of an uncle, less of a dad in my mind. Uncle Tully then shows up in the WWF, and you're like praying that like they know how to use him. They're like, I hope you know that he was a star in WCW. Don't make him a scrub. And then they don't make him a scrub, and he has those legendary matches with the Rockers. Man, I saw 2 out of 3 falls. Brainbusters versus the Rockers at the Rosemont Horizon when I was a child. Amazing. And so is Tully Blanchard. Glad to have him on. Enjoy a conversation with the great Tully Blanchard. What can I hit on before we get to Tully? Well, I've been on TV a little bit. I told the story of how I think I re-injured my hematoma before wrestling Adam Page, literally 2 hours beforehand. We are 3 weeks later, still hurting. I also wrestled on the main event of Dynamite. Was I the main event? Sure. Let the world know, Colt Cabana, main event of Dynamite. Sure, Cody's team would go on to win and he would cut a promo on Darby leading to a big pay-per-view match, but Colt Cabana, main event of Dynamite, don't forget it. And it's always nice just to be on TV. That's how I look at it. My mom can turn on TNT, my uncle, my cousin, they can turn on the channel, and there I am. And sometimes I think about, there's the huge stars. If I was to relate it to my child, let's say Tully Blanchard. We saw Tully Blanchard on TV in this main event angle, and we saw Arn Anderson and Barry Windham and Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes. But we also saw Too Cold Scorpio tagging with Marcus Bagwell, and the Z-Man was on there. Even Big Josh. And what was his name? Norman the Lunatic. Those guys were out there too. And we remembered them and we appreciate them. Colt Cabana was also out there. And I will have a legacy going into the future thanks to AEW, kind of putting the cap on it, which is great. Speaking of legacy, we got a new president, I think. Famous last words, I'm not a political person. I understand the idea of politics, but I always said politics were like wrestling. When I was in the WWE, let's say, or even in AEW, and the people on the internet are reporting things and reporting different things and saying things are fact, and I'm literally in it, or it's something that's happened to me or my friends, and I just go, oh, that's not what happened. Why is everybody talking like that's what happened? I feel that's what the whole world is about politics. There's only X amount of people who really know what's happening. But what I do know is about leadership. So this is nothing about political stances. It's just about leadership. And I've had jobs where I've been in positions just in life personally where my leader, the person who is supposed to be mentoring and influencing me, is mean, is a bully, is motivated themselves by hatred, and I know that is wrong. So honestly, we were given two choices. And I don't know the insides of everything, but I just know that having a leader who is okay with homophobia, who is okay with transphobia, who is okay with racism, who is okay with white supremacy, I don't want that as a leader. We've seen what's happened in the past, and hopefully we've made a change for the better. You might not agree, you might unsubscribe, you might hate me now, but the number one person can't be a homophobic, racist bigot. If we believe everybody is created equal, then we have to believe everyone is created equal. I mean, listen, I think Biden's kind of sucks. He smells little girls' hair. It's so weird and creepy. At least maybe everybody's kind of equal, or we're in a step in that direction, I think. I don't know because I don't know. Quote unquote, I'm not a political person, but I am a person with empathy, and I am a person who hates hate. Go wrestling. That's where I put up my little wrestling pennant. And my choice is to go to the conversation with Tully Blanchard right now. Enjoy the talk.
Tell me how many squats you did.
I did 250.
Did you really?
And 100 push-ups in 10 minutes.
I did a weird tour, and this obviously isn't about me, but I did a weird tour with Nick Bockwinkel, like when he, well, obviously wasn't wrestling. I did a tour of Japan, but he was like there to celebrate the AWA because the promotion I wrestled for like had the AWA championship. And so he came on tour with us at like, you know, he must have been in his late 60s, early 70s or something.
Right.
And I was like, he was every morning he was like, I'm in my room, I got my bands, I do my squats, I do my like, when you come in here and tell me I just did 250 squats and 100 push-ups in 10 minutes, is that, do you think that's more of like the mentality of you're a professional wrestler or just keeping healthy?
Trying to stay healthy, number one, but it is the rigorous schedule that we used to be on. A lot of times you weren't allowed the time in the gym and food because you're jumping on airplanes and you're going, and the only time you had was to do some squats and push-ups and stuff. So
body weight exercise. So this, the idea of the quarantine that happened is nothing to the wrestlers who used to be on the road 300 days a year. Right.
Yeah. I mean I just rolled out my push-up blocks and my bands and my, I did squats one day and step ups on the stairs the next day and cardio and
Was there somebody notorious in your locker room that like had the greatest at home workout?
Oh, there were some guys, and I forgot their doggone names, but we used to do, Flair and I used to do squats a lot, and especially during the Horseman era. We hated doing legs.
Okay.
So we didn't have a leg day. So we did our cardio and legs together, either squats or step-ups. And then you did a body part the other 3 days in the gym. So you did chest, shoulders, and arms.
In my head, that's just, you guys were doing that like just at the beach, I just assumed? Like on the beach
together? No, we were doing it most of the time at the gym.
Okay.
You know.
But I'm saying when there was no access to the gym.
You'd do it in the hallway.
Right.
Or the emergency stairs.
And is there like 20 NWA wrestlers just in a hallway doing squats together as a team?
Ooh, that was usually me and Flair.
Just you and Flair, okay. Right.
But there were, you know, I mean, Paul Ellering was a beast. I mean, he used to do 90 minutes of lunges on one leg. And then the next day he'd do 90 on the other leg.
Mm.
And that's just insane stuff to me.
And he, I mean, at that point, he's not really wrestling, right?
No, he's just managing the Road Warriors.
So were you guys all like, why are you doing this or no?
No, just, I mean, you just
watch him. That's the culture?
And it was, he just wanted to be in the best shape of anybody there. And he was.
And then are people using, like to the people who aren't in shape, are you like, look at Ellering, he's jacked. Why can't you be in shape?
No.
None of that.
Nah, it was, that was the thing that made me be able to excel was the fact that I could get knocked down and get up a bunch. The thing that happened to me, and this changed my whole career. I wrestled Dory Funk Jr. for the World Heavyweight Championship and went 60 minutes. And at the 30-minute mark, I couldn't move.
Whoa.
And if you've never been in the middle of the ring in front of wrestling fans and have the world champion slap you in the head and say, get up, kid. Get up, kid. Come on, kid. And
also, so casual because he probably is in such great shape, right?
Oh, Junior was a monster in the ring.
So to him, at 30 minutes, it's like nothing.
Oh, he wasn't even taking a deep breath yet. and killing me.
Yeah.
And it was early in my career. And so I said, okay, I will never be out of shape again. And I immediately started busting it.
Take me through the last 30 minutes of that match. I mean,
I don't remember
your legs either. I've done a couple 60-minute matches, and in the same way, like I'll never be in, and I just remember how dead my legs were. You can't move them, right?
I mean, it was just, I mean, the junior had me just in a hold, and for a lot of it, and
I was gonna say, you sit in a spinning toe hold for an hour.
It was horrible, and but it made me get in shape. It made me stay in shape the rest of my career. And if I wasn't in shape the way I was, I couldn't have performed the way I did.
How many 60-minute matches do you think you had after that one?
Oh, I know that Arn and I did 60 minutes with Rock and Roll Express one time in a cage, which was remarkable. And then I did one with up at ECW.
Not with Shane Douglas, was it?
Shane Douglas, yeah. Yes. Yeah. And it was the first 30 minutes was great.
Yeah.
The last 30 minutes was horrifying because we couldn't figure out who was the better heel.
Okay.
But 60 minutes was not the rule very much in those days. But those are the ones.
I feel we hear differently that. You know, you hear, Flair and Steamboat were doing 60 minutes every night, you know, for
the champion had to.
Yeah.
You know, at certain periods.
But I just assume everyone was doing 60 minutes every night.
No, but it was, in fact, when the champion was doing 60 minutes, we got to go a little shorter.
Right.
But, no, that, you know, Flair and Steamboat did that a lot. And when Flair when the NWA was still territories, mm-hmm. and Flair was traveling to different territories, that was the recipe at a lot of places, because you're always wrestling the top babyface.
A San Antonio kid, is that correct?
That's where I grew up. I wasn't born there.
Where were you born?
Calgary.
Really? Because of why?
Because my dad was playing for the Edmonton Eskimos.
Oh, okay. Which is football.
Football.
Yeah.
Canadian football. And he played there for 4 years.
Okay.
And
do you have any memories of that?
No, I was born.
Well, when did you move to Texas?
In 64.
How old were you?
10.
Okay, so you would have memories, no?
I've got memories of that.
Yeah.
But Dad started wrestling in Calgary, and then went from territory to territory. So my first numbers of years were San Francisco, Los Angeles, Honolulu, Houston.
Oh, my God.
Indianapolis. We moved to Indianapolis in 59 or 60. And my brother was born in Indianapolis. And then in 64, we moved to Dallas for a year and then to San Antonio.
Can you tell me how, your mindset as a kid, as you're moving from town to town? Did you like it? Did you hate it? Did you make friends? Would you?
I don't remember enough of it to where I'd mess, I just don't. I remember I liked teriyaki and white rice on the beach.
In Hawaii?
In Honolulu.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I've always liked rice better than potatoes.
Good. Good.
And I don't know that you really, and maybe it's different. Maybe I was traumatized and didn't know it. But, we fit right into the next city we moved into. Mm. You know, I was Little League baseball, Little League football, and Little League basketball, and
right.
Then until you got old enough to play it in school.
And I guess, as an athlete, probably that's it's easier to make friends maybe or come into a new town, right? Because if you're good, then,
Yeah.
On the Little League shows. Did you go to the wrestling? So did you go to wrestling with your dad to all these shows?
Sometimes.
Were you the little kid running around the ring beforehand?
Not really. I don't remember really ever doing that. But I know that we did, especially up in Indianapolis, they used to do a lot of, during the summer, a lot of fairs and stuff. And they would have softball games with the wrestlers against mm-hmm. some local team. And then they would have go-kart races with the wrestlers and all that kind of stuff. And those things were really kind of neat. You know, I don't know how neat, because I was only, 6 years old, 7 years old. We moved when I was in the fourth grade. But they were, I remember going to Fort Wayne, and then when Arn and I left WCW and went to WWF, the first town that we wrestled in was Fort Wayne.
Right.
So, I was having, okay, well, I remember used to go in here.
Yeah.
But
did you have big wrestlers who were nice to you that you remembered that were your dad's friends? Who were the mean wrestlers on TV or whatever?
Oh God, the Sheik scared the crap out of me one time. I was sitting underneath the camera at television, and the Sheik stuck his doing his ranting and raving and came underneath the thing and grabbed me by the shirt and hollered in my face. So whenever I'd go to TV with my dad, whenever the Sheik came out, I'd always go hide.
Yeah. Scary dude. Later, would you be like, oh, this is just a nice man? Or maybe he wasn't a nice man. I don't know.
Well, he was nice to me.
Right.
He laughed about that a lot. And I didn't really get to see him a lot because when WCW started going nationwide, those areas, Toledo, Detroit, that kind of stuff, when we'd come to Detroit, it was a different thing than the local.
Mm-hmm.
And so never really got to run into those guys. I know that You mentioned Bockwinkel a while ago. Bockwinkel was my dad's tag team partner in Indianapolis when I was young. And so the Shires brothers were there, and the Miller brothers, and Dr. Big Bill Miller and Jerry Miller. And the talent was phenomenal. And Nick was a great performer. We would bring him to San Antonio, and he'd always stay at the house. I ended up, when I was refereeing, and then at the first of my career, Nick would travel with me. And if you've ever been around Nick, Nick likes to, would like to pontificate.
Right.
Yeah. And, but the knowledge that he was pontificating,
yeah,
was very good.
Yeah, but it's good, but you're also like, what are you, like 18 or 19? Are you kind of like a little like, ugh, stop talking to me, or no?
No, okay. No, because it was, I don't know why, but I've always been able to listen to people that were giving me knowledge. Mm. You know, it wasn't just chit-chat. I probably would have got be quiet if it was just chit-chat, but it was good, solid psychology on the wrestling business. And it was stuff that, I forget who told me, it might have been my dad, you find people that are better than you and pick their brains and listen to them. And I was fortunate that I didn't have to pick the brain. They were just
right
pouring into me.
Is Bockwinkel a mentor?
Would have to have been pieces
right
of mentor.
Okay.
Both the Funks were mentors, whether they know it or not, because I would pick, I would watch, I would see what they do. And the neat thing is, I refereed for 3 years when I was in college. You're in the ring back then the whole night for every match.
And right, they don't have six referees. Yeah,
exactly. You were within arm's distance of everything, and this was good, that was bad. This is not very good. This guy concentrates, this guy doesn't. You know, so you were up close and personal with some of the greatest performers that this business has ever had. That was huge in my development. And then when I started wrestling, to actually now put it into action and crowd response and that kind of stuff was just accelerated my career.
Your dad started his territory in San Antonio. Is that correct or incorrect?
Right. And well, it was actually Fritz and my dad took over the Dallas territory, which we were part of. But my dad's deal with Fritz was that dad would make his own TV show, run his towns the way he wanted to run them.
And how old were you at that point?
I was in high school. When we moved here to San Antonio in 64, that's when dad started that. And so I was in the fifth grade then. But as I got older, and then we started running more towns, and then we didn't start our own territory until I got back in 77. Because I graduated college in 77, then I went to Florida for a little while, and I went to North Carolina for the rest of 77, then I came back December, ready to start 78, and that's when we actually started our own territory.
Because, I mean, I kind of wanted to ask, like was it a mom and pop, were these territories like mom and pop ran, or was there a solid, I don't want to say like a corporate team, you know, because it's such a different time. But I mean, are you running because I hear that you're like, I'm reffing. So I assume in my head, it's just like, I know you're going to train and you're going to become a wrestler, but it's also like, well, we could save money because Tully will ref and he'll ref all the matches. And then maybe mom will do the tickets, right?
No, it was a little bit different than that, but it was close.
Okay.
You know, the smaller territories, you had different people doing different tasks. We were producing our own TV show, and we produced a TV show, like a studio show, which was by far the best. But
why do you say that?
Well, because if you're taping your live show, your stars that sell the tickets are not on TV because you're not showing those matches.
Okay.
And you need your stars. Back in those days, you needed your stars to be on television so that they could draw more people. Back in the 70s, 80s, your television show was an infomercial rather than the product. Today, the TV show is the product.
Mm-hmm.
The old mindset is a little bit different than what that fits in today. It is, and that was, you know, what you needed to do. We'd bought an old grocery store and remodeled, put dressing rooms in it, and seats on three sides. And then
so you made your own studio.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it was, and we could seat 400 people.
Mm-hmm.
And 400 people for a studio show was.
And they're coming. Like, is it free?
No, we charged them $2.
$2? And they're coming. No, I mean, you're selling that out no problem, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it's the same people every week or no?
Didn't know about that, but it would they would line up around the building.
I mean, would you see the same kind of familiar faces?
Well, we lit the thing so well so that it was, you could see a few on the front row and right. then go back, but you got the crowd reaction. You know, you'd come out and do your interview, wrestle your match, go back in the dressing room. And there was no lingering to watch because mm-hmm. we were watching on the monitors.
When you were in high school, did you know you were going to jump in the family business?
At some point, I knew. I didn't really know that I would be a wrestler, per se. When I went to college, I studied radio and television because I thought that I'd be a promoter and do that aspect.
But you were you not a... great like high school athlete. Did you do college athletics? Or?
Yes. Yeah, I played football.
So you don't think, like, as a great athlete, probably a transition to wrestling wouldn't be that hard?
Well,
or do you just see Bobo Brazil as a giant man and you're like, I can't be like that?
Well, no. I mean, I'd already refereed, and I refereed in the summer and stuff, and I just didn't know the money was made by the promoters.
Right. Okay.
and except for my dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just didn't know. But I never expected, you know, the promoters' kids would always have a certain image.
Yeah, like a stigma on them.
Well, they were always baby faces, and they were always pushed to be stars, and most of them couldn't, except for maybe Mike Graham and maybe Greg Gagne. They were never that good.
Can you tell me some of the ones...
No, I don't even know.
Okay.
I can't even remember.
It's just apply or assumed, right? Like, or it just is what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and it was a little bit of a hard decision, but when I switched heel in my own territory, it was our business increased by about 30%. So it was by far the best decision.
But you came in tagging with your dad, being a white-eyed baby.
No. I didn't. I tagged with my dad one time in 1977 in North Carolina, but never in San Antonio, never did anything with him ring-wise in San Antonio. But I switched heel after about, I don't even know when, but it was a thing to do because I was a mediocre babyface and I was a real good heel.
Yeah. and then tell me how the influences of Terry and Dory, were those the two?
Oh, Terry, Dory, Bockwinkel, Wahoo was huge. Johnny Valentine, he always liked my dad. And dad, when he was on crutches still, and he managed Buddy Roberts as his brother. And so I did a year wrestling Buddy Roberts and John Valentine critiquing every move for... Every night.
So what would happen? He would be watching, and then you.
Oh, he'd be sitting at the ringside with Buddy,
and then you would come back to the locker room, and
oh, he'd just
a master class, yeah.
Oh my gosh, he was brutal, but it was, you know, you got to listen. I mean, Valentine was one of the greatest of all time,
right? But when you're young and it's coming at you, because I do believe there's a way of doing criticizing and not criticizing, and it's coming that hard, there does become a point where you start getting frustrated with a person, even if they're a legend.
Well, it was, I understand that, but I know that I absorbed what I needed to absorb. Right. It was valuable.
Yeah.
you know, and those guys were just huge in my career and the philosophy of how to do it. And
were there other young talent at that time with you, like people that were coming up that the older generation were critiquing and giving this knowledge, or do you feel it's just kind of you? Like, is there other wrestlers on that timeline who almost had that same experience?
Not really with us, I don't think. I know that when I went to North Carolina in 77, there was a bunch. That's when Steamboat was just getting a push, and there were Tiger Conway Jr. was there, and there were a number of younger stars there. And I wasn't going to be. The reason I left was because they either needed to start killing me, or I needed to go.
Right.
You know, because the spots were full and the young spots were full, and then so I went back home and took the knowledge from the TVs and everything and how they ran their territory and how the Grahams ran Florida and put pieces of that together in San Antonio so that we could produce a better TV show and have a better product and become more successful. It was valuable stuff. Again, I was just a middle of the card babyface. I really was.
Well, what was your timeline? So what's your timeline to, I guess I'm a little interested in leaving San Antonio and going, does it go right to Jim Crockett?
Yeah, I went back to Crockett in 84.
From
San Antonio. So I worked for my dad from 78 to 84.
So was he upset with that decision, or did he tell you to make that decision, or?
No. The things that happened, we had started on the USA Cable Network. It cost us $7,000 a week at Southwest Championship Wrestling until we didn't have any more money. And then we kept producing the show until we ran up a big enough bill that Vince went to them and said, I'll pay the bill. You give me the TV show, TV time. And he did.
That's a lot of history right there, right?
Yeah. We were too small a territory to take on that big of a financial chunk, but my dad, I mean, look at where we are today. My dad had that vision.
Mm-hmm.
And
was there a meeting between him and USA? Like, how did that work?
I don't know that we had a meeting after that. We had a meeting to get on.
Yeah.
And
would he talk to you about the idea of, like, we need to get on this cable channel? It's the future?
A little bit. I was a little arrogant at that time, and we didn't have a lot of visionary conversations, but, you know, we were producing ratings and getting people in the buildings. But the unfortunate thing was that my dad knew what it was like to be on the road, and he liked paying wrestlers, and he liked guys being paid to work for us. But you can't spend 45% of your gross to wrestlers and make a company a viable company.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you go back and look at all the books, that's basically what happened.
And that was also a decision for you to then head on over to Jim Crockett?
Well, we'd actually lost just about everything. We got the wrong guy was a partner, and he had the TV rights or the TV time was in his name, and he gave our TV time in San Antonio to Dallas because he wanted to. He was a guy from the car business, and he liked to skim and take. And my dad didn't.
No, in the car business?
My dad wouldn't do that, and so the guy got a little irritated and took the TV away, and then you don't have English-speaking TV in San Antonio, and this led to that, and then you don't have a business anymore. And so that's when I went to I actually went to Kansas City.
Okay.
December of 83. In January of 84, they had a big show in Kansas City. I mean, in St. Louis. I think they wrestled there once a month. Crockett was there. Dory Jr. was there, and Dory was the booker in North Carolina at the time. I was there wrestling Buzz Tyler, and we had a very, very good match, and
a lot of crowd reaction and stuff like that. And I don't know, I don't remember how I ended up at the Marriott after the matches, but anyway, I did. And that's and I was up in the lounge and talking to Jim Crockett and Dory Jr. And one of my more bolder statements that I didn't usually make. I'm a little shy. You may not visualize that. I'm a pretty self-contained person, but I told Jim Crockett, I said, if you hire me, I'll make you lots of money.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, we'll talk about that when we're not drinking. I said, okay. So Monday, I called him, and they gave me a starting date. And I started February 14th, 1984. So I gave my notice in Kansas City and loaded up my Cadillac and drove to North Carolina.
And started it.
And started. And
were those, I mean, when you guys were just on the roll, you know, wrestling, you know, Magnum and Dusty and Horseman stuff. I mean, is it like, I look back in my head in these flashbacks of me watching the TV and just all the years, because it was such a good chunk of a run. Like, is it just like, are you in the moment just like loving every bit of it? Or is there always...
It was hard, hard work wrestling 330 days a year and all the travel. I mean, that's what you did,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you worked and all of a sudden you're getting paid.
And are you sitting in it being like, this is great? Or is this like a job to you? It's a good job. You know, like, I want to know, like, where on the meter of like loving life or not loving life?
Well, I don't know that you actually, when you're traveling like that, I don't know that you can sit back and say, I'm loving life, but you're not hating life,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you're making money and you're paying and you hate income tax time. And
well, we know that from the history of a lot of wrestlers, right?
But knowing the history of a lot of wrestlers, you never want to get in trouble with the IRS.
Of course.
So you pay your bill.
Yeah.
And but you still have to do the work. But I mean, it's what you work for. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, to wrestle in front of sellout crowds every night, no matter where they are, doesn't happen very often. Mm-hmm. Never happened very often in wrestling. When I got there in 84, it was not the North Carolina that I left in 77, which was big money. My first time in the Greensboro Coliseum, there was 1,500 people there. And that means that there's about 16,000 empty seats.
Mm.
And looks like a bomb scare.
Mm.
And 6 months later, Wahoo and I were in a Indian strap match, a bull rope match with Flair and Dusty. There were 16,000 people there. So, you know, you get the thrill of being part of changing that whole territory. And then as it went on, changing professional wrestling,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the whole country became your territory because of the superstation.
And then do you guys see it as a team, or is there too much individual? Like, you know, nowadays it just seems, I'm not saying at AEW, but I feel, well, I can't speak. I just know personally, like, I did, you know, I was with Ring of Honor very early, like in the inception of it. And this is on a way different level than NWA, but it's the only thing I can think of when I think of this. I just remember we were all young and we all felt like we were growing this company and kind of like help changing a little wrestling in our era. And I just felt this real teamwork camaraderie. And then later in my years at different places, I didn't necessarily feel that. And I knew that was a good feeling, and I thought that was really good for wrestling. And I guess I'm curious if that's the feeling you guys had.
We had that feeling for a while.
Right. And then it's not that necessarily.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it is. I never ran around looking at what people made and whatever. But when people that are not necessarily, they're part of the team, but the punter and the kicker shouldn't get the same amount of money
right.
that the friggin' running back and the quarterback
yeah.
and the middle linebacker get.
Yeah,
you know, and we were pretty strong at the quarterback and running back position, and there were four guys that were pretty strong in the whatever role they were
right.
playing,
yeah,
making everybody look good, and they didn't necessarily want to take care of the four of us, and so feelings got a little
It's always money that divides everything, isn't it?
Well, you know, well, it's
it makes, yeah, you, it makes
you,
sense.
You have to look at yourself and be happy with, okay, am I happy with this? If I'm happy with this, then I'm not going to get angst at what anybody else is making.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get slighted and you know that you're generating revenue and other people are getting rewarded for it, mm-hmm. and you're not,
mm-hmm.
and I mean, it's not even the amounts. It was, okay, these guys get a contract and you don't. We weren't even talking amounts.
Yeah.
And they're not even offering you a contract. Oh my gosh. That was bad tactical error.
Right. I mean, I guess so that then those decisions are easy to move on and move to different places, right? You wrestled for the AWA a little, like after all of
once.
This? Is it just once?
Oh God.
Go on.
Oh my God.
Because it was like ESPN AWA, is that right?
I don't remember. I came up there. It was in 1990 and oh my God, I can't remember all that stuff. What goes on today, I can't do. There was just, it was a friggin' diction. I couldn't remember it all and I forgot something. And
Their style at the AWA at that time, you mean?
Just the match.
Right.
I forgot and it was a pretty key.
Gotcha.
Kind of a key spot.
Gotcha.
And I came back in the dressing room and people started yelling at me and stuff. And I went, whoa, I don't need this.
Right. There you go.
And, you know, so.
And so then I am curious. You told me a couple months ago that I think you said you were basically done as a full-time wrestler in your mid-30s. Is that right?
Yeah, I was 35.
35.
Yeah, I was really at the peak of my career.
And so what do you say to yourself? Like, what do you envision your career or life at 30? I mean, that's just starting your life, basically. Like,
my life, when I met Jesus Christ, it changed my heart and it changed my life and changed the direction of everything that I did. And, you know, and I wouldn't change it. You know, I'm 35 years old and I'm unemployed for 14 months. I lose everything financially. I don't have a job, can't get a job. I mean, it was just crazy. And then how the Lord supported me and got me going and up and four kids and
mm-hmm.
unbelievable stuff. And now I'm 66 years old and my kids are grown and
What was the move? Not necessarily meeting Jesus Christ, but what was the move? What's the 15th month? You do find a job?
Yes.
Okay. Is it it's not wrestling. It's real life?
No. It's real life.
Okay.
And the actual scenario, I had just gotten married. You know, unemployed, getting married is probably not the wisest thing
right.
to do. But anyway.
But love is love.
And I found out that right before Christmas that my wife was pregnant, and I was petrified. I had been going to church and reading the Bible and learning who Jesus Christ was. And so here I am, and I'm praying, and I said, okay, I don't know how I'm going to support a family. And in the scriptures, it says if you can't take care of your family, you're worse than an infidel. And it killed me. I said, you know, I hadn't had a job in 14 months. 3 days before Christmas, in my prayer time, I just said, okay, God, I quit. I'm done. I've read this book, and it says you'll take care of me, and you'll meet all my needs. And I said, I'm done. I quit. I'm done. Christmas came 3 days later, and we didn't have much under. My parents sent me a little money, and I could get a present or two, and I didn't need a baby stroller yet because we just found out she was pregnant. And the day after Christmas, my phone rang and somebody asked me if I would come speak in their church, tell my story. And I said, well, I can do that.
Mm.
And they said, well, how much do you charge? I don't have a clue.
Right.
I didn't know people charged for right. that kind of stuff. Then a little bit later, my phone rang again. They wanted me to come speak to a men's group and wanted to know how much I charged. Phone rang a little bit later. That kept happening for the next 5 days. And I scheduled 75 speaking engagements.
Whoa.
With an unlisted telephone number in 5 days.
I don't know what a miracle sounds like to anybody else,
mm-hmm.
but I think that was a miracle.
Mm-hmm. And that's something you can do, talk in front of a bunch of people, right?
I can show up and
It's a good
tell my story.
It's a good transition too, because, you know, done wrestling full time. You know, did you have a fear like, fuck, I'm going to have to go to a factory or something?
No.
But like in that 14 months when there was...
I couldn't get a job. I mean, I applied for jobs. I had people at companies, Coca-Cola, the president of Coca-Cola Consolidated in Mobile, Alabama, offered me a job, said, I've got it. The big CEO said, you can't hire him because I want my son to do that.
Mm.
And I'm going... I didn't know how hard it was. I went to employment agencies. People in North Carolina and Charlotte knew who I was. And they go, what are you doing here? And I'm going, I need a job.
So it could that was the opposite. It didn't get you in.
You need too much money. Yeah. We can't. I'm a college graduate. And I couldn't get a job.
Mm.
I mean, it was crazy.
It's wild.
What happened was, and this is 30 years of doing this, the Lord was grinding that pride and that Tully can handle it, Tully can do it stuff, which is how I handled the wrestling business
mm-hmm.
all those years, to depend on him. And for the last 30 years, ever since that's happened, I depend on God to open the doors and to be places and to guide my steps. And he has for 30 years.
Right. And then AEW is just the icing on the cake?
I'm full-time staff in San Antonio at a church.
Okay.
Very large church.
Nice.
Very well-known church. And I'm the director of the jail and prison ministry, which I've been involved with since 1994. It is...
Did you ever go to a wrestling show there?
No.
Okay. There's some jails that do it.
I know.
Yeah.
Would in a prison. I could get it done in a prison, but jail, it's too confined.
Gotcha. Okay.
But they watch on cable. They have TNT on
and they see you coming in after. That's great.
And you know, the few times that I was on last year, so that's all good. But you know, when WCW was going to offer me a contract and we never came together on the figures, and that early in the early 90s, the door was always got slammed shut because I couldn't have handled it. I couldn't have walked with God and done that.
Mm-hmm.
30 years into my walk with the Lord, AEW asked me to come on board and be a manager, coach. It's working. So, I mean, it's a good thing. It'll be a real good thing if they offer me another contract.
Yeah.
So.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. Well, it's been fun hanging out with you at AEW, and I appreciate you chatting with me on here.
Oh, my pleasure.
All right, thanks so much.
Thank you, Colt.
All right, Tully Blanchard has a t-shirt store online, prowrestlingtees.com/TullyBlanchard. A couple great old school Tully Blanchard t-shirts up there for you to wear. Otherwise, we're going to start sending this thing home. We got one more episode in this series that comes out in 2 weeks. It is a fun one. I know you will enjoy it. Before we leave, though, let's get into some plugs and...
upcoming events!
All right, all the past archives are ad-free at patreon.com/ColtCabana. For a dollar or more, you can also get full Instagram live call-in shows, never-before-seen Colt Cabana content, Let's Watch Wrestling, Art of Wrestling live video, and so much more. Twitch.tv/ColtCabana. I am on there all of the time playing all of the games. Not all of the games, the ones that I think are fun. Come join me. It's a lot of fun. Grab some merch, ColtMerch.com, DigitalColt.com, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, @ColtCabana. ColtWrestling@gmail.com is my very public email. That's where you can hit me up for shows, conventions, business, or non-business stuff, or send me something fun in my P.O. box, which can be found at the bottom of my website, ColtCabana.com. Quilted Onyx sent me probably 24 masks, and they're so cool, and I'm going to wear them everywhere and give them to my friends. That was courtesy of my P.O. box. Upcoming AEW. If you're in Jacksonville, come on down to AEW. They are safe. They are socially distanced. and they are fun. Intro music by the Ukulele Teacher on YouTube. Outro music by Superfun Yeah Yeah Rocket Ship. Podcast cover art designed by Jimmy Lee. Photo by James Musselwhite. Thank you to our sponsor, BlueChew.com. And of course, OneHourTees.com. They help run ProWrestlingTees.com. That's where you can buy all of my t-shirts. ProWrestlingTees.com/ColtCabana. Thank you to my Patreons over at the $10 tier. Here we go. Ingmar, Elizabeth, Jack, Sasha, Jade, Logan, Hold the Line, Harry, Lee Fitz, Joey Carr, Jocelyn, Maureen the Free Pile Picker, Aaron Wood, Molly J, Stacy, Kimmy B, Ernie P, Jeremy Kaz, Adam Ho, Jimmy Legs, Caleb Nix, Tristan, Joshy C, Tabitha T, Jay Baca, Ismail, Jesse Coles, Mary Kate, Jimmy Anderson, Matt with one T, Sammy Wise, Mikey Monroe, Freddie Sether, Nash, Gut Pocket, Stevie Straw, Vicken, Anthony Coco, Nick Chedick, Arlen, Deanie Weemy, Davey Mart, Joe Sandy, Jimmy James, Johnny Wrong is Johnny Wright, Tom Lanza, David, Jeff Kem, Johnny Font, Cody Cliff, Nicky Nels, Juan, Corrado and McGinnis, Chris Miggs, Nigel, Adam Farr, Tama Q, Sam the Drifter, The Ska Man, Eddie Tells, Justin Erie, Rudy Boy, Joey Mills, Caleb South, Maria, Aaron Scarps, Vicky Mills, Christine the Baylor, Morag, and Scotty B. I put my own twist on some of those nicknames. I hope I had the creative freedom to do so. If you want one, $10 over at the Patreon tier. All right, that has been the show for this week. This has been The Art of Wrestling for Colt Cabana. I'm Colt Cabana. Thanks.